And then, of course, there are industries that are booming right now.
Sweatpants and pajamas.
Nobody's buying expensive purses right now, but they're buying Lululemon. I'll tell you that much. I'm wearing Lululemon pants right now.
Are you really?
I am. Do you want to see me do a little Zoom dance here? I mean,
sure. You need to move your camera. The camera needs to move down a little bit. I mean, are you taking your clothes off while you do that?
I am actually wearing pants. They're Lululemon shorts, but.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv. And I think I'll put it out there. I'm excited that I'm going to also be a contributing educator. I guess that's a good phrase, a contributing content provider to Sales Gravy University. So super excited about that. And Rachel's here.
I'm super excited. When Gina told me about that first initial conversation about it, I almost like ran off the road. I was like so about to pee my pants. So excited for her. So awesome. I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey. I am a mortgage loan officer with US Mortgage and also the creator of the Ultra Fit Lifestyle.
Ooh, so much has changed in the past.
I know. I've created, you never know what I'm going to
fucking say between
create,
the two of us. Like, oh yeah, right. Like so much has changed in the last several months. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and it's continuing to change, which is one of the things that we talk about with Steve Benson today.
Exactly.
Is things are changing, things have changed, things will change. So how can you change to adapt?
Yeah, super excited that we brought Steve Benson back. He has been a guest of the show before. He's been a guest of the Pivotal Leader, my original podcast several years ago. And he came back because he really wanted to, he actually asked if he could come back because he had some ideas he wanted to contribute to how people can manage right now, specifically in sales, during a time like this that is very much a recession. So pivoting, a big part of this conversation, I took some really good some notes. I always like to write down a couple key takeaways for me. And one of my takeaways was the importance of re-examining your messaging. I think this is a really big thing. And the example he gave, well, I'm not going to share that. You're going to have to listen to this episode because I thought he gave a really good example of what is it that you're actually selling right now? Because are you still selling something you were selling that you shouldn't be selling now because now it's not even relevant? Does that even make sense? So that was my takeaway.
My biggest takeaway, you'll have to wait till the very end of the podcast and find out how I make Steve squirm.
Yes, you did. That was like the biggest squirming I've seen. I mean, I know we've made some men blush, but...
I have always enjoyed making people squirm. You know, when I was a performer still, I guess I still am, but just not currently, during my stage career, I used to amuse myself by picking out somebody in the audience and just really like honing in on them to the point that they knew that I was honing in on them and I'd just make them squirm. It was so much fun. And that's kind of what just happened with Steve. So it's a lot of fun. But he does give you guys some great advice on how to pivot in this interesting time we're living in 2020.
And he also offered up a free gift for our listeners. You're going to have to listen to find out what that gift is and how to get it. And we're not going to tell you what part of the episode it's in. So you're going to have to listen to get that free gift. So a little more about Steve before we get started. Steve Benson, after receiving his MBA from Stanford, he worked in sales at IBM, HP, and Google, where he was Google Enterprise's top sales executive in 2009. In 2012, he founded Badger Maps, the number one sales app in the Apple App Store, which helps field salespeople be more successful. Such a cool app. Badger Maps provides automatic territory management for field sales reps and helps them take action on their customer data by visualizing it on a map. on your phone. Reps use it to optimize schedules and routes to get more meetings and sales. And, you know, even though that we're not out there as much, we're going to be back out there and you're going to need these tools to be better in sales. And you're going to love this episode with Steve. So let's get on with this episode with Steve Benson, CEO of Badger Maps. Welcome back, Steve, to the women your mother warned you about.
Thank you for having me, Gina. I'm really happy to be here.
We're so excited to have you. I was looking back on the last time we had you, and it's been over a year. You were on our show pretty early on into the show, and now we're in the middle of our second season. So it's cool to get back in touch with you, see what's going on, especially now.
Lots changed. It's been a big year.
A lot has changed. I was looking back. I think we last talked to you and we last interviewed you was February 2019. And at the time of this interview, it is August 2020. So much has happened. You and I have continued to build our relationship. And a couple months ago, we talked about your idea of talking about actions sales leaders need to take in a recession. And we are often talking about this pandemic and the COVID that we're going through, but it is very much like a recession. And we knew a recession was coming up in 2021 because it's cyclical. And so it was coming. It just came a little earlier. It's like a preemie. It's a recession preemie.
We were probably due for one, but that combined with everything that's gone on, I think has made it a lot worse. You know, not to be pessimistic, but I would not be shocked if it gets better before it gets or gets worse before it gets better in the next year here.
Oh, we haven't seen what it's really got to do. I was having a conversation with my husband the other night and I was like, because some industries are doing really well, like for whatever reason, the industry I'm in right now in mortgage and real estate is just booming in our area. And other industries are may never come back, like the cruise ship industry, let's say. And I said, well, what is the overall economy looking like? So he pulled up some graphic chart and it had, you know, 2007 and 8 and all that was kind of like this little dip and then the graph and then boom, right now we're like super low and it's not done yet. Like the fun is possibly just beginning in terms of economic effects of pandemic.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, from a broader economic perspective, the GDP is down a ton. And this is obviously it's focused in certain industries. Some industries, some things benefit. Like, so more real estate's changing hands right now because people are kind of reshuffling where they live, changing things. You know, their desires for where they live changed, but then in real estate, longer term. If a whole bunch of people don't have money or are unemployed, that can really cause a problem, right? Because people can't pay their rent, can't pay their mortgages, things, you know, houses come on the market. It can be good for a real estate agent or a mortgage broker in the short term, but longer term, you can do some serious damage to a real estate industry.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. An agent the other day that I was having lunch with, she's like, she mentioned all the people moving to our area from up north that are getting mortgages and leaving this house behind up north that they just have no intention of paying for anymore.
Right. Well, and there are going to be winners and losers in many, many places that are, and some of it's predictable, some of it's surprising, but broadly, economically speaking, the biggest drivers of the economy and what's going on are the numbers are all pointing deeply south, and the stock market hasn't responded to that. It's, you know, I think it's trying to look out over the horizon line, but we've got a big chasm to cross before we can get back to the horizon. So,
you know, that just hit me. I Rachel, I think we need to do an episode with you. I will interview you. I think we should do an episode on real estate and mortgages because this hit me. I was thinking about this the other day, the impact, right? You've had so many people losing their jobs right now. And what's that going to look like when they get another job, but they want to either refinance or buy a home, and then they're going to have this gap?
Oh, yeah. I can definitely speak on that, but we can do that another day. That's very familiar. Plus the other fact of people that have gone into forbearance and they don't really actually understand the effects that that's having. Like I had a conversation on that yesterday with a borrower who just had no idea that forbearance would prevent him from buying a house for at least 12 months after he starts paying again.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all that. So
there's a ton.
Let's table that because I think that's an interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started. Sure. Let's focus on Steve.
So Steve, as a major player in the sales world, especially working with a lot of sales organizations, what have you been seeing due to COVID? What trends have you been seeing? Just general impact on your business, but on other sales organizations.
Well, I think the biggest trends are that everyone's experienced this shift in the market, and a lot of it's bringing up new challenges and obstacles that salespeople, from their perspective, need to overcome that they probably weren't dealing with before. They're new stuff. So the first thing that's happened because of COVID, I think, is that people's competitors are desperate and willing to do desperate things. So, you know, a ton of companies, a ton of people are really hurting right now, and that makes them willing to do things that they would not have been willing to do before. So deep discounting, liquidating their inventory to make ends meet and make payments, giving away free stuff that used to be something that you could charge for and build up your margins with, like, you know, free consulting or other free value, really aggressively trying to steal customers away from other companies. So that's the first thing that I think major change that salespeople and businesses are dealing with is that their competitors are behaving differently.
Mm. It sounds like their competitors are behaving badly.
Well, it, from a long-term perspective, I mean, you know, desperate people do desperate things. It's why you don't want, you know, as a society, you don't want poverty, for example. It's because desperate people will do desperate things. And that long-term, that has a real negative impact and on the way the world works, right? And in business, it means it can screw up a bunch of things if people are desperate. I think the other major trend and change I think that we're seeing right now from a sales perspective is that salespeople's prospects and customers are, you know, also acting differently. They're getting salespeople are encountering a lot more resistance from customers to doing deals that wasn't there before. People not wanting to engage, people not being able or wanting to open up the purse strings, people not wanting to meet with you, even start a sales cycle, more resistance there. And if you ever wanted an excuse to not look at a new product or a new service, now you have the best excuse ever, right? And I think a lot of people can just mail in that excuse, like, oh, budget's just closed. We're not looking at anything new. So salespeople are running into a tightening of the purse strings and a resistance to spending money. Sometimes that's coming from the top of organizations. People at the top of the organizations that control the funds are just saying, hey, we're not spending any money on anything that's not critical. But that means that a lot of projects that would have had a positive net present value or a great ROI aren't getting done. I think people are also encountering just deals, margin contraction salespeople are encountering, and generally deals that when they are getting done, they're not as attractive. So procurement offices are getting really a lot more aggressive. They're jamming through discounts, better terms, and just in general, companies are seeing a tightening of their margins.
I can feel it. We were talking about that before we started recording, that the resistance is real. And there's a lot of people out there, you know, hey, I'm going to say, keep going. And you're going to have some thought leader saying, you know, it's BS, keep going, but the resistance is real. And then, you add to that, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And I know that Rachel experiences this, is the emotionality that runs underneath it all. So dealing with buyers, who may be experiencing other emotional stuff because of COVID. whether it's they're stressed out because they're stretched out in the workforce and they're in their office, or someone at home is sick, or like a lot of our listeners, they're doing homeschooling and they're working, and someone in their family got COVID, and the last thing they want is a salesperson like pestering them, right? So a salesperson could be in a position to be snapped on.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. People's stress levels are high for personal reasons, professional reasons, family reasons. Teaching kids at home has got to be, that's something it's hard for me to even empathize with that. I can sympathize that that's a really challenging time if you have kids right now, but I just have to manage myself really. So it's hard to really wrap my head around how challenging that must be if you have a 7-year-old right now. I mean, just really tough.
Well, and I think that the one thing that is hard for people to put their finger on is that it's more of it's so uncertain. Like, one of the things that makes people feel secure and happy, in my opinion, is something to look forward to. You know, you have this something to look forward to that you're going to do. And right now, kind of everything, you're not sure if you can plan something, you're not sure how it's going to work out. And, you know, touching on the stuff with school, like people, I've made my decision of how I'm handling it, and then I'm just sort of close my ears to everybody else. But there's a lot of people uncertain of what to do. And I bet that also reflects in the sales world of like, when say Gina or you, Steve, are talking to somebody that they don't really know exactly how it's going to work out, so they don't have a good answer for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, uncertainty creates stress, and uncertainty makes it harder for people to make decisions. They don't know what the future looks like. And so I think that expands sales cycles. It kills a lot of sales cycles. And it can really affect sales reps' motivation. I think if you're a sales leader, it's really important to manage the motivation of your team. It can be really hard to get deals over the finish line right now. A lot of deals are still getting set up, but they're not, you know, so people are prospecting well, they've got good mid game, and they're walking their sale, the prospect through the sales cycle. But then when it comes time to actually sign the check, there's some big challenges there. I think it's important if you're a sales manager to have really tight processes, really tight infrastructure for your sales team, get the right technology in place. And I guess, you know, that's important in times of plenty as well. But now that we're in a time of famine, I think it's really important to get all the ducks in a line and really tighten things up for hard times. You know, you want policies in place that will allow your sales team to do their best work. And you have to empathize and understand that some of your salespeople have, you know, these kids at home, they're dealing with COVID, they're dealing with financial stress, maybe a spouse lost their job. And a lot of people also just have this new work life dynamic where they maybe have set up a little office in a bedroom, but the dog is barking and the kids are running around and, you know, being crazy. And I think that you have to empathize with your team and know that they're going through, people can be going through some stuff, and there's this new dynamic going on. I think there's also people, the uncertainty that you're talking about, it creates risk, and uncertainty makes people, it's really important to help your field sales team or any sales team feel motivated, because a part of that loss of motivation is that they can feel the risk of losing their job. They can feel like I'm being phased out, you know, this company's not going to make it. So it's really important, I think, it's important as a leader to communicate, here's the short-term plan, here's the mid-term plan, here's the long-term plan, and be transparent. You know, here are the different things that can happen in the economy. Here's the different things that can happen to our business. If it's A, B, and C, like good, medium, and bad. If it's bad, long-term, this is what's going to happen. Mid-term, this is what's going to happen. If it's medium damage, you know, compared to what we think right now, then, and that's what this would look like. And it would have these effects on us in the short, mid, and long term. And here's how we would react. And that honesty and transparency from leadership, I think, is really important, because it helps people focus on their job. And if they don't feel safe and feel like they know what's coming and under these different circumstances, and they don't, it makes it hard to trust leadership, makes it hard to stay focused. And so a lot of people just end up, you know, kind of spinning their wheels and worrying all the time. And that's one of the reasons why we become less affected, a lot less effective in a hard time like this.
You know, you hit on, you said motivation. I'm curious what your opinion is on how sales leaders can not just keep their sales teams motivated, like how can they help their sales teams keep their prospects and clients motivated? Does that make sense as a question? Because they have to go out there and face all of this. They're already going through their own trauma as a salesperson, worried about losing their job, worried about, you know, making money for their own families. But now they're taking that trauma with them, and people can feel your stuff, right? And now you're going to go in front of a prospect or a client, and that's underlying. And so now you got two people in trauma trying to talk to each other.
Yeah, that's a tricky situation for sure. You know, I think you know, people have to communicate. People, you know, when you're talking with customers, I think a lot, you know, everyone talks about right now, you know, how empathy is king, right? You have to recognize the state that someone else is in and what's going on with them, and, you know, take the time to really get to know what the situations are personally and professionally. I think it can be from a deal perspective, it can be a lot harder to get something through right now, to get things done. And I think, you know, a lot of times your sponsor in an organization, the person that really wants your product, they have many more challenges getting the deal, this thing that they want, this purchase, over the line. And you have to really focus on enabling them, and you need to work with them a lot closer, because you're losing a lot of your sales abilities in these times, right? Like if you used to be able to sit down with the whole decision making group at an organization, and you could see who in the room was, you know, had body language that wasn't that open to your, and you can kind of tell who has an objection and maybe even guess what that objection is and get ahead of it. That's really a lot harder over a Zoom meeting or something. And so you need to leverage your sponsor, who already knows these people and has deep relationships that you're probably not going to be. It's much harder to build in this type of world, these deeper relationships. So you've got to have that sponsor be your eyes and your ears in these organizations. And this is more and more true the more complex your sale is. And, you know, especially right now, there's more decision makers and more in things because the purse strings have tightened. And so your sponsor, you can get them to uncover before the meeting even happens what are the objections that the different influencers and decision makers in the room are going to have, and do a pre-call with your sponsor before the actual call with the broader meeting. Do a call with the sponsor to like talk about who are the players here, what do you think the CFO's objections are going to be to this, what do you think the, you know, who's got a problem with this, and then you can, in the meeting, get ahead of some of those objections, address them, bring them out so they can be discussed. And so that's I think that's a key thing that you can do to kind of keep things going. Yeah, the empathy and the really leveraging your sponsor are two tools that you can use to kind of deal with that. Keeping your customers motivated and dealing with the trauma that everyone's experiencing right now.
So I'm gonna throw you for a loop if it's okay. And because this is such a common objection right now, and it's a common objection in general, the money objection, but this objection of just, you know what, due to COVID, I mean, I read the text to you. we're cutting back. We're not spending any money right now. We know we need to, but we're not. So sorry.
Yeah.
What's your response to that as a sales pro?
So I think that's an objection that is hard to overcome. I've actually got a video on YouTube on my sales. I have like little training courses that I've got a video on overcoming the pricing objection. And I kind of break down how there's different objections behind a pricing objection. Like maybe they don't see the value, mm-hmm. and it's a failure of the salesperson to have not shown them before this point what the value was they were going to get in terms of dollars from making this choice to purchase your product or service. So if they understood, well, I'm paying 50 grand for this, but I've calculated and I believe in these numbers that I'm going to get 300 grand from this, even if the person, and I'm going to receive that over the next 4 months. So it's the purse strings are going to open up, even if there is quote unquote no budget. And, you know, maybe you can put them on a payment plan so they're receiving they're paying as they're receiving the value. We do that a lot at Badger. Like I've been giving out a lot of 2 months free right now because we save people money in gas and they sell more. But we'll basically be able to point to, hey, do this, try this stuff out for 2 months, and the gas is going to pay for it. And so like that. And so if that's the case, and you're getting all these other benefits too, but you're saving that much money just in gas with the software. So it's like you can match the savings with the timing of the savings with when they start to pay, with payment plans. Maybe you put 90 day payment terms if you're doing a consulting engagement, and that sucks because you're out the money for 3 months. But you know, if they've gotten the value already, then it makes it all the more affordable if they can time it. But you can, bottom line, matching the value that they're going to receive from your product or service, and really having them showing them and making them, giving them the tools to take up the chain in their organization to the person holding the purse strings and be like, hey, we're going to be paying 50, but we're going to get 300. And here's why I'm confident in these numbers. Here's the analysis. Getting ahead of it, I think, is and really communicating that is the way that you do that. And frankly, this is from the beginning of the sales process, right? This is from, these changes need to be implemented from, you know, when you first are engaging with a prospect. There are things that you can be doing differently right now, right? So a good example is, I think a lot of people should re-examine their messaging. If you haven't re-examined your messaging the sands have shifted under us, and you need to go to the market with a different message, perhaps. And one thing I see a lot of people messing up is they go to market saying, historically, and this has worked in times of plenty, this was the right thing to do in times of plenty, they've gone to the market saying, hey, we will help you do better. So if you go to someone's website, it's basically saying some version of our product or service is going to help things be better. That was the right messaging in January to be using. But today, I think a lot of organizations would benefit if they would shift their messaging to, we will help you do more with less. So you need to show those prospects how much in terms of dollars exactly that you will help them do more and with less resources. Could be less money, could be less manpower, could be less whatever. But I went through this exercise with our sales team and marketing team, and it was really, really helpful for both of those parts of the organization. And you know, our messaging historically has always been that classic, like, we'll help you do better. Like, we'll help your field salespeople sell 20% more. We'll help your field sales team get 20% more meetings. And we had a stack full of case studies showing that. That's not the right message in these times. And it's a tweak. It's not a big change to say, with Badger Maps, how did I do this? With Badger Maps, you're your outside sales team can generate the same revenue, even though it's 20% smaller. And that message really resonates right now because a lot of sales managers have had to cut back on their team by 20%, and now everybody's stretched thin. So giving them an efficiency tool that does the sorts of things that we do, that message resonates. And there's a huge difference between these two messages, and one, even though they basically say the same thing effectively, but they're really different. And the one resonates way more in this down economy.
How were you able to come up with that shift in the messaging? What got you there?
Well, I think it's like any marketing, any marketing or messaging, you have to think about, you have to put yourself in your customer's shoes and try to empathize with them and think about what they need to hear right now. And you do that by being close to your customers. You do that by talking to your customers. But I think that's kind of a framework that you can use with most, in a lot of situations, shifting to will help you do more with less. A lot of people have less right now and they need to do more. So if you're telling them I'll help you do more with less, that's going to resonate.
It's a good one. Well, I asked that question as kind of a leading question, because one thing that the approach I've taken early on in the pandemic was just reaching out and trying to find out what's going on in those organizations. Just starting conversations to find out what are they feeling, what's happening, what's the impact, what are the results, right? Like, you know, finding the traditional, what are the pain points, and hearing them put it in their words of what it is that they're struggling with, but they may not even be able necessarily to articulate what specifically they need. But if they tell you what they're not liking right now, you can start to deduce what they need to then reinvent your message.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That's the exact strategy people should be using. And reach out to people right now, because people are picking up the phone in a way they never have before.
Yes.
I suspect, because I mean, I am. I'm like, oh, unknown caller. Okay, what the hell? I'm lonely. Hello?
Hey, Warners, if you haven't had a chance to give us a rating and review, pop over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and you can leave us a rating and review there. Of course, we like 5 stars, but we're not going to beg for that. I mean, a review is probably cooler than a rating anyway, right? So pop over to do that. And now back to the show.
Well, I was just thinking that as you were talking, Steve, that one thing that is important for salespeople in general and sales leaders to continue on with is to continue to talk to people and keep yourself top of mind for those organizations and individuals who may not have the capacity to invest or commit or make that purchase right now. But when the purse strings start to loosen up, if you have continued to check in, like Gina was saying, ask questions, be present, and just be somebody that's at top of mind, that when the time comes, you've developed that relationship over time. And I'm sure that your software can help salespeople keep motivated when they're out there just like, this sucks, nothing's happening, oh my God. But then they can check and see, hey, who can I see next? Who can I go talk to next? And just go to the next person and keep driving forward. I mean, we talked about that concept really early on when the pandemic began, that just keep talking to people and checking in. And by now, people are probably losing that motivation, but it is a good reminder that staying top of mind is going to be important in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one thing that can be motivational is to think about the year and instead of the next month or quarter, right? So keep teeing up deals. You know, you're going to run into roadblocks. You're going to run into budget problems. You're going to run into, you know, longer sales cycles right now. They've expanded. And when sales cycles expand, you know, we always talk about the benefits of contracting your sales cycles, expanding sales cycles. It's the opposite, right? So you get less sales now, but you can still get them later. And so focus on your year, you know, focus on the next 12 months. Sure, you know, Q2 sucked, Q3 is not looking good, but and Q4 may not be great either, but you know, think about the next 12 months, set up the deals that you can knock down in February, in June of next year, you know, so, you know, think about the long distant future.
It's funny you say that, because when all this started and I started to kind of do the same thing, I looked at it and I go, okay, Q4, I am just going to aim for Q4. I'm not going to.
I don't think they can cancel Christmas. I heard they're canceling Halloween.
I'm like, Q4. And then, like, now Q4 not looking so good. And now I'm like, 2021.
I was telling the team, I remember telling the team, this is probably in April, or, you know, like, hey, things are really tough right now, but by August, we'll have tamped this down. You know, we'll get it under control, and people will be back out in the field. People will be buying software again. People will be making things happen. And August was a little premature for that guess. Although I was just talking to a customer of ours in Czechoslovakia this morning, and everything's open there now. They're like, no, we don't really have the virus. No, nobody has to wear masks. It's been tamped down. You know, people stayed home for a while. They wore masks, and now it's gone. And so we're back. Things are back to business as normal. Oh yeah, the bars are open. Are the bars still closed in California? I'm like, yes, the bars are closed in California. to your thought a second ago as well, I would say one more important thing to think about. I'm referring to Rachel, your thought about how to stay top of mind. I think that more phone calls, you know, more just engagement and interaction with people. And I also think it's a great time to sharpen your sword on your social media game. I think social selling skills are really important, are really important right now. I think people they have the time now to kind of scan through their LinkedIn feeds and social media feeds, and this is a topic big enough for a book, certainly. And I'm not an expert in social selling, but I've had since the pandemic began, that's one thing that I've tried to refocus our team on, is doing a great job there, creating great content that engages people. And I've had several social selling gurus onto my podcast, and there's a lot of little tricks and tips that can deepen existing relationships, can keep you top of mind with people. And it's really worth thinking about those and learning about those and sharpening the sword there. But there's several episodes that I've got on my podcast, Outside Sales Talk, to check out on social selling skills right now. There's stuff to learn there, and there's consultants that can teach you about it. And a lot of it does, a lot of it's not rocket science either. I think, you know, it's stuff that is very learnable, and there's often really pretty low hanging fruit that you can execute against pretty quickly.
Well, that is one thing that Rachel has really, really focused on in the past several months, is her social selling skills, big time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've just been doing some research, and I mean, when this pandemic started, I decided that it was not going to, I just was going to try as hard as I could not to fall into the trap that it had laid out for a lot of people. And I just started focusing on educating myself in specific ways so that I could come out of this knowing that I grew. And there's still opportunity for that. You know, if you're wondering what to do and how to grow, then hop on over and check out what Steve was just mentioning on his Outside Sales podcast and learn something. Like, if you're getting stressed out, just shift your focus and put your mind into learning and growing. And it could be, as Steve just mentioned, something really simple that you could implement right now, or a tweak, or just focus on overhauling what you have going on. You know, I've been very focused on Instagram and just growing a whole new account organically, and just really focusing on how to build that and get consistent with it and learn all the tricks I possibly can. I mean, what else do you have to do if the bars are closed in California?
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, drink by the pool.
You know, one of the things that I've been focusing on, and that's getting back to messaging, and I'm sure, Rachel, you agree with this, like, you're to be really effective at social selling, you also have to be really clear in your messaging. So going back to reviewing what is your messaging, that is something that I've had to go back and do and look at. And that's not an overnight, I'm going to fix this. Like I can come up with a message, but then there's a bigger piece to that, right? So one of the things that I'm working on is a lot of content that's going to build up to that social selling piece. And so in that content, are the blogs, are the videos, what is it that we are offering? What is it that we offer as a solution? And being really clear and articulate with it to a point where they're very happy. Like my marketing team is only as good as I help them be, because if I can't tell them, you know, like I literally I put together like this full diagram for them of like what everything is in the framework of what we're doing. And so I had to literally draw it out so that I could then create the strategy, so that I could then write the blog series, so that we could then create all of the rest of the messaging to then take to social selling, right? So it's not just, and Rachel will be the first one, like she'll get on and she'll coach me. She'll coach me. I'm like, I don't really think you should have posted that. And not in a bad way. It's just like, there needs to be a method behind the madness of your messaging. Ooh, a method behind the madness of your messaging.
Say that three times. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so important to have other people get their eyes on your stuff. I think, you know, when you're building your social messaging right now, and just in general, you're thinking about your messaging, it's so important to think about the benefit that the customer or prospect will gain from your service or product in the relatively short term. A lot of people are like thinking about the short term right now. The longer term the payoff is of your product or service, the harder it is to sell right now. So position the messaging as, you know, how you're going to help them do more with less, now. How they're going to get a quick payback
now.
Exactly. ROI
now,
next month, you know, like, you know, I think that's so important. And in general on coaching and learning, it's such a good time to learn right now. And if you're a manager of a sales team or any team, I think it's a really important time to spend a lot of time coaching and guiding and being hands-on with your team. So whether it's pre-call strategizing, post-call debriefing, you know, joining calls with your team, whether they're remote or in person or whatever, but giving a lot of very specific coaching, talking through the good opportunities you still do have, like, you know, it's a time to dive deep and make the most of what you do have. And I think a sales manager should be spending 50% of their time doing those types of things as a rule of thumb in a down economy, because like negotiation training, for example, everybody needs new training on how to defend price and defend their margin and communicate their value. You know, I think everybody needs coaching on how to build pipeline in a new world, right? We need to relearn how we prospect, rethink what our messaging is, rethink how we're selling, because in a bad economy, things really are very different than in a good economy on all those things. And a lot of the things that we have been doing aren't going to work anymore. And, you know, it's survival of the fittest doesn't mean the biggest and strongest survives, as we can see from some of the really big companies that have gone under. It's who's the nimblest. It's who's most adaptive to change.
Who's the most agile?
Who's willing to pivot?
Who's mm-hmm. Oh, you know what can help with all of that?
That's why I mentioned it, Gina.
I know you were teeing me up.
Bump set.
I mean, improv-based sales training. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's another tool in the toolkit. What this is about: how to have better conversations, how to be better communicators, how to be better problem solvers for your clients. Right? It's like, how do you pivot?
Yeah, I think. You know, I've had some improv training, but I think it was mostly when I was younger, but it's something that I think that I draw on all the time. It's a it makes you more nimble and confident and comfortable with saying what comes to mind, I feel like it just connects your mouth more directly to your brain in some way, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. where you're just able to not second guess yourself as much and build confidence to just say the thing that should be said.
Well, Steve, if you need to brush up on your improvisation skills, Gina has a great online improvisation offering right now. You could just jump right in there. I mean,
do you have a website for me on that?
Oh, just, you know, spontaneousselling.com.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. No,
another good thing to do when the bars are closed in California.
Yeah, and fun. You can do it over Zoom, I would imagine, too.
You know, for years now, I've been pitching you on the idea. Yep, there we go. She's on video with the baseball bat. I've been pitching you for years on getting with your team, especially like when you guys go over to Madrid. I'm like, I can go to Madrid. And, you know, now years later, I can say we can do everything on Zoom.
Yeah.
I couldn't say that 6 months ago because I wasn't even willing to adapt to it. But now I'm like, we can provide this service all over the world now.
Yeah, I think that's a key adaptation for your company. I mean, I think these are going to be tough events to get together for, but you lose some of the physical movement aspects, but maybe, you know, as long as you had people set up their cameras in a kind of open space, I think.
Well, that's something that we've had to adapt to and I'm constantly experimenting. I mean, I joke with, you know, we have because we have our theater business, which our theater shows just reopened a week ago. And then you have the corporate side of our business on the training. So you get the consumer classes people come to, and then the corporate classes, and the consumer theater classes, they've been my experimentation. I'm like, okay, let me see how this exercise works. And like, so it's like I'm building the plane as I fly it with them, and I roll out new things. I'll be like, in the moment, I'm like, ooh, and I'll get an idea right in the moment, and I'll completely change the curriculum in the moment. They don't know that, and test out the idea to see how it works. And what's been cool is seeing how exercises that we were doing in live improv classes, there are some that actually work better virtually and that have more impact virtually. And you can have, like, I was like, same thing, like, how do we do the physical movement? We can still have the physical movement. It's just positioning of your laptop and of your camera. And like, now I have a standing desk. I'm looking at it because I really should be there today. I have a standing desk in my office now because I'm building a home studio. And, you know, my presentations, I'm going to be back on my feet doing them. And my classes are going to be back on my feet because I do better as a presenter standing than sitting. So we can really take our improv back to getting it to feel like it once felt. Now that we're kind of through the technology and the wonkiness of all that, now I see it. I couldn't see it 6 months ago.
Well, it's kind of like a few years ago when Gina was still doing one-on-one business coaching, and I was one of Gina's coaching clients. She gave us all at Christmas this book called A Beautiful Constraint, and it's a fascinating book. It talks about just basically what we're all involved in right now, that Gina would have never created what she's got going on right now had we not been had this constraint imposed upon us. And I think a lot of businesses are facing that they would have never considered doing virtual selling and just doing these types of things, and then discovering that actually it's huge, and it's made some of the bigger names, like I was in a group with a very big name person who I've always wanted to get close to, actually two different people that now I'm in this virtual environment with them that I would have never been able to get that close to. I mean, you know, theoretically close, but, you know, because the opportunity is there for these individuals to make money and connect with people online, they're actually able to connect with more people online than they would have even in a live setting. So it creates opportunity if we're all willing to see it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So I want to talk a little bit about field sales because you have a lot of expertise in field sales and you run a software company for salespeople, Badger Maps, which is so cool. Everybody needs to know about Badger Maps. So,
thanks.
You know, field salespeople are under a ton of pressure right now since a lot of them can't go into the field. So what are some things that, in your opinion, how can they bridge a gap of having no face-to-face visits, especially when their sales pitch is around customer experience and the product in person? How can they bridge that gap, you know, via video, via Zoom, to overcome it? It's kind of like me trying to adapt improv to a virtual world. People can't wrap their head around like doing these sales calls in this virtual arena.
Yeah, for sure. There are certainly some really hard stories here. And there are a lot of products that are just best sold in person, and anything else you do inside sales, retail sales, online sales, it's not going to work nearly as well. So I guess, you know, a lot of salespeople are left saying, well, I used to do all this in the field. What do I do now? How do I adapt? I think the first key is you need to stay productive and positive and do what you can to generate new sales cycles and moving your existing sales cycles, even though they might be longer because you're not doing this. It's not an optimal way to sell the product or service. You got to move those sales cycles downfield, even if you can't get in front of people and demo it and show them the actual thing. I think focus on filling the top of the funnel is really important, and people will pick up the phone now. The end of the funnel is the hardest part right now, I think, because there are some new big objections. The middle of the funnel, I think, there's some challenges there, but I think, you know, building your relationship with your sponsor, the person, you know, working with them to help you navigate the organization for a complex sale, I think is really important. Like we mentioned before, it's a great time to build awareness and, you know, build more lists of opportunities, do more prospecting, thinking about the longer term and really investing right now is good. Thinking and maybe rethinking who your ideal customer profile is, I think is a worthwhile thing to do. You know, your ideal customer profile may have shifted a little bit. You know, when you're talking to your prospects over Zoom or over the phone, the key is to sell and be productive right now and build sales cycle, you know, move these sales cycles forward, right? Like, so get on the phone, get the relationship, build the relationship, and help them understand throughout the entire process to maximize your probability of closing a deal. Help them understand throughout the whole process, what is the benefit that they'll get from the solution? How do they count it? What is the, you know, the ROI? And, you know, when they get to an economic situation where they're able to move forward, the deal's teed up and ready. I liken it to play, you know, right now if your sales pipeline, et cetera, was like a bowling alley, usually we're kind of like throwing the ball down the aisle at the 10 pins. We hit some, we miss some. Now we might be not just setting up 10 pins, but we don't get to throw the ball maybe, but we set up 10 pins, and then we set up 10 pins in front of them and set up another 10 pins in front of those and just keep setting up the pins. And then when things crack open, we're going to get to throw the ball down and really, really blow it out.
I totally visualized that. Kind of want to go do that now. For real.
I know. Wouldn't bowling be cooler if we got to do it that way?
Yeah, like a fun video to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people have asked me, are we just in trouble? Like, is there a way out of this? Like, and I think over time, you know, things are going to open up. There's a lot of industries we're just kind of screwed right now, but the world will open up, you know, next summer we'll have a vaccine, you know, hopefully it'll be in frontline workers' hands or being injected into their bodies a lot sooner than that. Right. But I'm hoping most people have it and the world can open up next summer. And, you know, until then it can be really hard to replicate these connections that you can make with customers in person, if you're over Zoom or you're over the phone. These are clunky and awkward interactions, but we can make them fun. We're having fun right now, right? We're over Zoom. It's fun.
And I think it comes to practice too. I think it does get more fun the more, I was at a B&I meeting at 7:30 this morning, right? On Zoom, right? I think you can continue to build relationships. I think you can build better relationships now because to see someone's face versus making a phone call, I think can build a better relationship. Any other thoughts on how we can, moving forward in this COVID and post-COVID world, how we can build better relationships with our prospects and clients?
Well, yeah, I think, we have one more thing in common with everybody right now, right? Like, and I feel like in half the business calls I have, we bring up, we all have politics in common. We all have, not that we all agree on things, but we all have, we all care more about them right now, and that's in common. I think we all have that. We're all, all these businesses are dealing with similar things. We all have a lot of more similarities in our personal lives. Everybody quarantines in similar ways, right? I think, so there are more ways to kind of bridge the gap and find similarities. In terms of building relationships with your customers, a lot of the things that we historically did are tougher to do now, but it will be back. And I think, ultimately when you're dealing with decision makers, they want you to drive across town and visit them. They want you to fly into town. It's a better experience for them. I think Zoom, like you just said, I think Zoom is a better experience than the phone, and in person is a better experience than Zoom. And in time we'll be able to get that back. I think, dating and sales may be enhanced by the internet to some degree, but the internet will never replace in-person dating or in-person sales.
Or in-person improv.
Or in-person improv. That's right. But I think we're gonna make do for now. Yeah. And now is not forever. I think that's important to keep in mind from a motivational perspective too.
I've got one more question for you, and then Rachel's got some final questions. And we talked at the top of this about different industries. I'm curious what you have seen, because you're selling to a lot of sales people. Are there specific industries that you see that are doing better than others? Because I'm sure there's also a lot of frustrated salespeople who they're like, great, Steve, yeah, wait it out, but I got to put food on the table. Maybe I need to hop to a different industry. So what industries, and Rachel had talked about that a little bit too, talking to her husband, what industries are doing well right now?
Industries that are big for field sales reps that are still really in play, real estate agents, I think there's risk to the real estate investment economy right now, but a lot of properties are changing hands. People are, moving from cities to suburbs. People are moving from this house that doesn't have a pool to this house that does have a pool. People are looking for more space. They're willing to live further out from cities. And so there's a reshuffling that's occurring real estate wise. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I think medical, the essential industries, selling things that are essential. If you were selling beer to bars and you could get a job selling pharmaceuticals to doctors or med devices to doctors, that'd be a better spot to be in right now, because the bars aren't going to be open for a little while, but the medical device sales are still going strong, right? So there's selling products and services that are essential kind of across the board. And remember, tires are essential. Tire stores are open. So if you're, it's a fine time to be a tire salesman. I mean, people are driving less, but they're still driving and they're still wearing down their tires, right? So I think there are certain industries that are just, you kind of want to think about, am I in an industry that is not essential and is kind of going to be screwed for until next summer? Or could I get myself into an industry that is kind of this maybe has affected, but only affected a little bit. And therefore I could it's going to go strong. And could I get into that one? And then of course there are industries that are booming right now, right? Like in this, you know, this having your economy's GDP shrink by 10% and having 20% or whatever it is now, unemployment is good for very few people, but there are a few winners in this, you know, some of the big tech companies, the Amazons of the world, the Shopify's of the world, Zoom is doing great, you know, so the companies like that are, so there are bright spots in the economy as well. Although obviously if the GDP has shrunk 10%, then, there's a lot more gray spots than bright spots, but there still are bright spots. So you can, if you're in a gray spot or a black spot, you can try to move to a brighter spot. I think that, the key is just ask yourself, is this something that's still going on right now? And how much is it affected by this? And maybe you get into something like that.
Sweatpants and pajamas.
Right. I was just reading an article about a company that is selling a lot of sweatpants right now. The big fashion industry is nobody's buying expensive purses right now, but they're buying Lululemon. I'll tell you that much. I'm wearing Lululemon pants right now.
Are you really?
I am.
I've got rapid fire closing questions for you.
Okay.
We've started asking since the last time you were with us, Steve. And the first one is, because we are the women your mother warned you about, the podcast that makes business sexy again, how would you, Steve, define the word sexy?
Well, I mean, do you want to see me do a little Zoom dance here? I mean,
sure. You need to move the camera needs to move down a little bit.
I mean, exactly. Are you taking your clothes off while you do that? I have pants on.
I am actually wearing pants. They're Lululemon shorts, but I put on a button-down shirt because I wasn't sure if you were videoing this. But
we are. I mean, if you want us to see your Lululemon shorts, we'll look at them.
So sexy involves dancing for you. Is that it, Steve?
I think, so the question is, what does sexy involve to me?
How would you define the word sexy?
How would I define the word sexy? I think sexy is a state of mind. It's like an attitude. So I would define sexy as a playful attitude that people have, and it's a relaxed attitude, and it's willing to have fun.
I like that. I think we made you squirm a little. I like that. It's good.
A little bit. A little squirming.
A little squirmish. So this one will be easier. What's the best? What is sweating?
It's getting hot in here.
There you go. What is the best advice you have ever been given?
Best advice I've ever been given. It depends on the topic, but in business, I guess the best advice is to, I was given it when I was about 12 or 13, a friend of my father's who is very successful in business. And I did kind of a ride along with him, and he said, never work for a big company, work for a small company where you can kind of control your destiny more, and you'll have more responsibility. You'll learn more, and you can have more ownership. And have ownership in the actual business, like meaningful ownership in it, where, you know, you're kind of reaping the profits of your own labor. And, I didn't heed that advice for years. You know, I worked for Allstate and IBM and Autonomy, which got bought by HP and Google. And then finally, when I was, you know, in my mid 30s, I was like, okay, I'll start a company. And he was right when I was 12, and I should have listened to him earlier, but that's been probably the most valuable thing and most rewarding thing I've done is starting Badger Maps and kind of building a team, creating a product and really, you know, controlling my own destiny.
Nice. So in that same vein, what is some advice you wish you had been given?
Advice I wish I had been given. I wish I understood more about human psychology earlier. I wish I would have, you know, gotten a major or something in that, or just read some books on it at a younger age. Being able to identify patterns in people's behavior and understand, you know, this these are personality characteristics that make someone a great person to bring into your life. And these are the red flags on someone that you should avoid or cut out of your life whenever possible. As I've learned more about these things and grown older, I've realized how clean some of these patterns are. You know, like you run into a lot of people who just are narcissists or just have borderline personality disorder. And I would have just kind of thought they were an asshole when I was younger, but now I'm like, oh, this is identifiable. And I could have picked this up by these signals a lot earlier.
Awesome. So last question for you, Steve, how can our listeners connect with you and find out more about Badger Maps?
Well, the best way to find me is probably on LinkedIn. I'm not too hard to find. Just look up Steve Benson, Badger Maps, and I'll pop right up. I guess if you're interested in Badger Maps and what we do for field sales teams, probably the best place to go to learn what we do is just go to our website, badgermapping.com. For enduring listening to me for all this time, just let the sales rep that you talk to know that I said that you could have 2 months free to try it out and kick the tires, and tell them that Steve said, because it's COVID times, that you need extra time to kick the tires and make sure this thing works really well for you.
Nice. So make sure you give that shout out for sure. And thank you so much, Steve, for being with us. And if you'd like to go back and listen to our last episode with Steve and find out how he created Badger Maps and some of the growing pains that he went through during that, then go on back and check out our previous episode with Steve Benson, which we had a lot of fun on. And thank you so much, Steve, for joining us today. We're super happy to have you, always.
Thank you for having me, Rachel. It's been fantastic. Gina, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. And we'll put a link also in our show notes that links back to your other show so they can get just a ton of you.
More Steve. More Steve. If you're not bored of me yet.
We would really appreciate a picture of you in your shorts that we could insert into the show notes. Yes. Awesome. Well, thanks again to Steve Benson with Badger Maps. And thank you, Warners, for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To find out more about our show, go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. You can also find out more about me at ginatremarco.com. And for Rachel,
you can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender. And I have my new business, Ultra Fit Lifestyle. So if you look around on Instagram or Facebook, you can find The Singing Lender or Ultra Fit Lifestyle. And thanks again, Warners. And remember, the best gift that you can give us is to give the gift of our podcast to somebody who might benefit from hearing some of these words of wisdom from Steve about field sales and sales in general, and some of the other podcasts where we offer great advice on sales and life in general.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.